Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. And Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Very good. Let's talk about the Middle East. Get an update on the Middle East, but in a little different fashion. But when you think about it, it all comes together. There's a lot of countries involved in the Middle East, and everybody's lining up their ducks. And, of course, the subject we want to talk about today, could it be possible, is there going to be an actual civil war in Saudi Arabia? And I think that's very possible. Most of the time we think that they'll take care of these things, but there's civil wars going on all over the place. Any place we go, there's a civil war. You know, we talked a lot about when Trump went over and visited with the king and promised him over $100 billion worth of weapons. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of routine so often. It's good for the military-industrial complex. And remember, Trump said, boy, well, I'm going to get you a good deal. I know these guys. You're going to get a good deal on it. But then there may be some other reasons. Many times when we give weapons or sell weapons or provide weapons to a country or a strong leader, it's to protect him, to protect that particular leader. And now that there's a disturbance, civil disturbance in Saudi Arabia, which may well be a spin over from the problems just south in Yemen, you know, that's where there's been a fighting going on for a long time. And the more we've looked into this, the more we find of the instability and thinking of the different reasons why Saudi Arabia is vulnerable to this. They're not the kingpins anymore. I mean, it used to be they were the boss. They were boss of oil. They could bring, when I think of the 1970s, they themselves brought the, you know, the oil, you know, the oil crisis down. And they weren't our best friends, but they were strong enough to act against us. So, but they're not in that position now. And the way we see it now, militarily, they have lots on their plate. They have to deal with their ally, the Israelis. They are dealing with their perpetual fight with Iran. They have to deal with us, too, as well. And then there's a turnover. The recent turnover, I think, is what's bringing this to light, because the turnover of the son being promised the kingship, and that is Ben Solomon. And he leapfrogged over a lot of people, which it brings up another thing. We have economic problems. We have this hierarchy problem. He has a lot of siblings. They're not too happy with this. So I think things are brewing there. And it's probably a matter of time before we see this type of war that we're seeing in Yemen maybe spilling over right into Saudi Arabia. And I think there's a little bit of that. That war does go over the border, you know, into Saudi Arabia in the south.
Yeah, it does, and I think you're right. This sudden change of succession to the kingship is really, I think, put a finer point on these differences that have been underlying. And you know, there are rumors that Bin Salman the Young, I think he's 32 years old, and he's in charge of a good portion of the country already, de facto. There are rumors that he, you know, had been in touch with the Trump campaign even, and that he had sort of gotten, they'd been given a green light for this change to come. So I don't think it took a lot of people in Washington insider by surprise.
But, you know, when we try to figure out exactly where he's coming from, and as we look at it, if we're going to put a label on him and who he identifies with, I would have to say, you know, Ben Solomon, the potential king soon, is a neoconservative. He's very, very aggressive, and he's very aggressive against the Iranians. Of course, all the Saudis are, but he had a lot to do with the aggressiveness going on in Yemen. So I think that's what we're dealing with. So this would explain, you know, why Trump is strongly in their camp. He couldn't have been more friendly with the Saudis when he went over there. But this raises other questions about what about Israel? What about Russia on this too? Because I think there's been feelers out that the Saudis might want to work with Russia. And yet at the same time, if this thing breaks out in the war, the contest will be between the Saudi faction against the Iranian faction, which is ongoing, Shia, Sunni fight, and oil, and these sorts of things. So maybe Russia then is going to be a very important player in this as well.
Yeah, and I think Ben Salman is, they say that he's been concerned about Russian influence in the region. I was just looking at a piece in Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper. The headline is, Ben Salman is good news for Israel and the U.S. And they cite essentially what you just said. He's strongly anti-Iranian. He wants to thwart Russian influence in the Middle East. He very much wants to topple Assad. So he's shown himself to be very, very hawkish. You know, he owns this Yemen war. This is something that he started when he first came into the defense, become defense minister. He owns this. He essentially owns the blockade of Qatar, which is sort of blowing up in his face, I think. So he has taken, and he owns really the continued supplying of weapons to jihadists in Syria. So he's shown himself to be an extremely hawkish person in the Middle East, and I suspect that might be why the Trump administration and Donald Trump seems to be so favorable toward him.
You know, although it's easy to understand, you know, the conflict with the Iranians, but it's also economics, too. Economics always seems to play a role, and sometimes that can even supersede some of the religious activity, but they put them all together and there's a mess. But right now, Saudi Arabia is having economic problems there. You know, in the 70s, it was guaranteed. They were the kingpins. They had the money, and they financed our debt, and that's where we bought so much of our oil. But that isn't the case right now. But the people are starting to suffer. If you're going to have a civil war, sometimes the winners of the war comes from the people. Maybe it's a bloody contest, but eventually they have to get support of the people. And right now, there's a lot of unhappy people there, a lot of Saudis who aren't employed. And so they're not the rich country that they used to be. And this may, you know, be a real problem for them to deal with the people now that are having their standard of living lowered.
Yeah, you know, they've had to enact some sweeping reforms. They put in a very unpopular austerity program for their vast bureaucracy. Everyone sort of works for the state, and they had to tighten the belts. That became very unpopular. They actually had to even overturn part of that. But, you know, and this is, I think, where you can see some fault lines, some friction. Bin Salman recently spent $500 million on a yacht that caught his eye in the south of France. So you can imagine these problems with austerity. You know, they're stuck in a desert. They at least want to get some decent money. And then you have the king spending very, very wildly. You also have 33% of 15 to 24-year-olds completely out of work, and it's a very young country as well. So I think you have the seeds being sown for this kind of conflict.
You know, and Qatar is involved in this thing, too, because Saudis are very aggressive now. It reminds me of how we treat our allies. They're allies as long as they're obedient. And as long as all the Persian Gulf countries were obedient, you know, to Saudi Arabia, they were okay. But all of a sudden, there was too much independence with Qatar. And now they have been threatened. And it doesn't look like they're going to roll over. And that's going to add fuel to the fire, too, because they're going to, if violence breaks out within that country, they can't help but, you know, they won't ignore it. And the Iranians, although I can't foresee Iranian troops, you know, going into Saudi Arabia, no matter, but they're like a lot of others. They do have influence and they do have a position to take. I think that the amount of involvement they have in Yemen is probably overblown, but they have a concern about that. They have an influence, just like they have concerns of what's going on in Syria. So even though we're talking about Saudi Arabia and that government breaking down, it sort of blends into the chaos that has been created over there in the various countries. And the more we get involved, of course, the more chaos there is and the more breakdown. So this would be another example that we certainly, let's say there's a civil war and there's a breakdown and there's a regime change, even though we might not have been the number one factor, we are participating in it. You know, we go over and promise, oh, well, it looks like you're under a little bit of stress. Well, we'll guarantee you $100 billion worth of weapons to maintain order because we can deal with you. And besides, you know, you work with the Israelis to maintain order in the region. So I could see this could be very, very important.
And, you know, the person who has now been shunted to the side, Mohammed bin Nayef, he was known, A, for cracking down on al-Qaeda and other extremists, but he was also actually on rather friendly terms with the the Emir of Qatar. There is sort of the question, did that have something to do with him being ousted? Because the claim was that Qatar is now getting too cozy with Iran and all these sorts of things. And the other issue is sort of laughable, how Saudi Arabia accused Qatar of funding terrorists when they're the biggest funder of terrorists. But, his replacement now, the young bin Salman, said, we will work hard so that the battle is on their side, inside Iran, which is taken as a real threat. And the Iranians called this a soft coup, this change in succession.
And, when we're part of that blame, defending Saudi Arabia and not saying that they are promoters of terrorism as well, and yet they feed us into, and that is Qatar, not Saudi Arabia, is sort of like a little bit of fake news. But the media doesn't pick up on that. We mentioned this yesterday about some things, the media won't blame. They won't go back and forth who's giving the fake news. But how many times do we read in the paper that all these compliments and the promotions that the Saudis get at the United Nations, that they are the fighters for against terrorism, and yet we do know exactly what they've been doing, and we've been involved with them all the way back to the Afghan war when the Soviets were in Afghanistan. We literally had our CIA training people to be violent, and then eventually that came back to haunt us.
Our viewers may be wondering, why are we talking so much about Saudi Arabia? This is a show about U.S. foreign policy. But I think that gets down to really what the underlying thing, which is the relationship between the aging king, the soon-to-be young king, and the Trump administration. We know that bin Salman has dined with Ivanka Trump and her husband, Jared Kushner, at least twice at private dinners. They're said to be very close. So where is U.S. foreign policy playing in this? Did President Trump give a wink to bin Salman as a successor? What is the U.S. trying to do? It would make sense if you consider Trump's very aggressive anti-Iranian policy.
I think that's a big deal. And that's the one thing he's been pretty consistent on.
Yeah. So, unfortunately.
The one thing he should have done a little flip-flopping on and change, because he flip-flopped on Russia. It's just too bad that of course, we've complained about that all along. He doesn't come from a set of principles on foreign policy. It's whatever seems to be okay for the moment. And I think this leads to a foreign policy that is chaotic and not well understood. And when you think about the chaos in Syria right now, ever since the former President Obama, decided that our policy would significantly change and we would really get involved, I think if you look at that, we've continued that policy. And even though American people voted for a president, said, I want to be less involved. I don't think we should be in the regime change and this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And here we are, more involved than ever, and we're not bashful. Trump is not bashful about really going after Iran, and that to me is tells you what may well happen, because when you come to Israel, they won't be quite as vocal, but we know exactly where they stand, because they are close allies with the Saudi regime, and they're our close allies, and therefore they will work in unison. So we know that they're lining up, but it would be I think it would be a total unknown what would happen, because when you think about the Iranians being involved in Syria now and the Russians involved, that probably is the biggest unknown. How would they react? And the Russians and Assad have the upper hand right now, and that's why we're threatening. we're threatening if that Assad releases any more gas, we're going to bomb the smithereens out of them. Because they're on the ropes. They're on the ropes once again. So that's a big mess. And of course, our position has always been that we contribute significantly, if not create, these kind of problems.
And I think you have a relatively naive president who's very susceptible to the influence of his closest advisors. who's been told that the use of force in the region can solve all of the problems, can do a geopolitical realignment, all of these things that the neocons whisper in your ear. But the thing is, there could be unintended consequences of trying to use this and that proxy to change things around. There's speculation, do the Saudis have a nuke? Does Qatar have a nuke? Several people think they may. Certainly this would be a regional conflict, not a civil war if it breaks out. And as you point out, with Russia involved and the U.S. involved, it could, you know, turn into an international conflict.
You know, they sometimes point out that Ben Salman and Kushner are approximately the same age, and they're very aggressive, and they've gotten their authority and power, you know, by inheriting it, this sort of thing. But they do come up, and there's things written about them that might be appealing to the young people, because they talk about modernization and diversification and maybe changing the whole old school. So we know that their political positions and their military position, but what would you think? Do you think that the two of them might have an image that would be appealing? What if they come along and claim they're going to give everybody free stuff, but that won't sell? They've been trying that, you know, for 30 years. That's part of the problem.
But I think their youthful appearance does help. And, you know, the Saudis spend billions of dollars on PR firms in Washington, D.C. So I think you can play this up, this young friendship.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how would you like to summarize this little problem that the world's facing in Saudi Arabia?
Well, civil war, yes or no? I'd say maybe. Here are the five factors. Failing currency reserves. Oil supply looks like it's dwindling. Inter-family conflict, you mentioned it. A blowback from supportive terrorism overseas, and an economy and unemployment that are pretty much in shambles.
Boy, when I listen to that and look at the factions that are lining up and what's been going on for a long time, even since World War II, and how we have worked with and had an agreement with Saudi Arabia, but the way the world's evolving right now, I would say it's going to be very difficult for the chaos of the Middle East and the regime change efforts and civil strife not to affect Saudi Arabia, which would be very, very dangerous. And it will make one strong point. It will make a point that maybe the world, especially the American people and our government, ought to consider a non-interventionist foreign policy. That, as far as I'm concerned, is the only way we can contribute to peace and prosperity throughout the world. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.